Welcome everyone to another special episode of After the Final Whistle. And tonight we have a very special guest. But before we get to him, I'll firstly like to introduce my co-host, Han Solo. Han, welcome aboard.
Hi, Alex. Thanks for having me. It's been great to continue on the podcast, and it's been great to interview a few of the coaches, which is a great insight, I guess, for a lot of players. So now it's been a pleasure, and now thanks for having me. And Alex, how have you been?
Very good, very good. I'm eager to get this interview going because it's a very, very important person. Introduce us to who we have on tonight.
We have at your screen with us, head coach of Calder United Women's Football Club, Mark Tocazzo. Welcome, Mark. I'm just going to give a bit of an insight of who Mark is to those that are not too familiar. Mark has been coaching for over 17 years and has been with Calder United as their head coach for the past 5 years. Mark's professional playing career started in 2004 with Belgium Sporting Charleroi youth team and continued as a lone player for a few of England's renowned clubs. And within Victoria, Mark played for Faulkner Blue, Doncaster Rovers and Thomastown Devils / Whittlesey Rangers. Mark's experience and dedication then led him to a coaching role, which there he obtained an AFCA license. A few key coaching achievements include coaching for Bundoora United FC, where they were runners-up in the Premier League in 2012. And the year after, with the Women's Melbourne Victory team as their goalkeeper coach, helping them become runners-up in 2013 and then league champions in 2014. Now, an astonishing achievement for Mark was in his first year with Calder in 2016, where he received the award for Coach of the Year. And in that same year, Calder United were MPLW champions. I guess it's not too bad for the first season for Mark. Now, that didn't stop there. Calder was a dynasty and continued their streak, winning FA Cups and numerous community shields. Through 2019, that was their year. Mark led his team to win not only the community shield, but also the premiership and the grand final at Amy Park. Now, let's dive in and get to know Mark a little bit better. Mark, once again, thank you for taking the time to join us on our podcast. It's a pleasure to have you.
Thank you very much, guys. I actually was thinking about this for the last couple of days. I'm pretty excited because I've listened to a few of the things you've done in the last couple of weeks, and you guys are doing a great job. So I was really interested to get on this and have a chat to you guys. And I'm really impressed the way you said my surname, Han. Some people don't get it right, but you did a really good job. Well done.
Thank you very much.
Well, thank you so much, Mark, for joining us. We'll kick things off because we're really eager to get into this one. Firstly, tell us, how have you been since we've sort of been in a stop-start for the past two seasons?
Can I speak my honest truth? No, I won't speak.
No!
It's been crazy, to be honest. It's been absolutely crazy, and we're all probably feeling it just like, you know, you guys are probably feeling it as well. It's just weird and crazy. You try and find things to do to remain connected to your players, to remain connected to your club, and I guess just remain connected to football as a whole. It's been, like I said, really tough. But yeah, as I said, you just find things to do. If it's conversations with your players, if it's upskilling yourself as a coach, yeah, just little bits and pieces. But you know, I've been lucky enough to do some of those things and do some courses. And the players are so important in this scenario because they keep you driving, you know, just keep you mentally focused to get started again. And hopefully that's, you know, literally in the next week or so.
Now, as you mentioned, we had a pretty interrupted season. During the time when we were able to play, how did you try to manage the sort of the expectations of your players and yourself during that time when we did have a good number of games going?
Yeah, I mean, we literally took it day by day, believe it or not, because we had the interruptions last year and then we had the interruptions this year again. We almost took every training session and every game as if it was our last, because we knew it could stop, obviously, at any point. And that was one thing that we sort of said to all our players was, you know, each game, each training, let's make it as if it's our last one. And we basically just had that keeping us going throughout the season. The only bad thing for us is we actually picked up some really good form just before the season ended. You know, we went on, about a 4 or 5 game winning streak. And previous history shows that when we've been able to do that, we've usually been pretty successful for the remainder of the year. So I tend to have thought that, watch out, everyone, if we were to come back, but we didn't get a chance to come back. So, yeah, we literally just took it day by day, week by week, and always told the girls this could shut down at any point. So just keep going, keep pushing. And they did. They were fantastic. They were so good.
That's awesome. And I didn't touch on too much about Western United. Are you able to give us an insight of your role there and what is to come in the next season or the 2022 season?
So we started a Western United Academy program. Amanda Stella is the general manager of women's at Western, and she's also a part of our club at Calder. And we got that program up and running where a number of players were identified through the technical staff from Western, a lot from Calder and some players from other clubs as well. We put this group together that would train once a week, that would specialise in specific training that they might not be able to always get at their club, so more based around their technical abilities. And that was our focus, to have a session once a week that was based around that. We got one session in and then the lockdown came. So my role around that was basically just to set up that along with Amanda and with the West United people to get that academy program up and running. And we weren't able to see it in its full capacity or full quality, but we're hoping to get that started back again next week, which would be fantastic. So, yeah.
And how did that approach come about? Did Western United seek you out, or was it mutual, or how did that go? So, because it's, you know, obviously they're going to be a new team. So how does that, you know, for those at home wanting to know, how does that process go?
So basically, it would have been around 2018-19. The former president, Eric Serianos, myself, and a few other key people at the club always had this dream of potentially bringing Calder to the national stage at some point. But obviously, with the way our structure is in Australia, it was very difficult for an NPL club to obviously apply for a licence. And then Western United came about in the A-League, and then it was... let's try and get into contact with them and see if they're interested in creating some sort of pathway. And it had its legs for the first 6 months, or through 3 months, and we looked really good. And then it sort of just dwindled away a little bit. And I think it was probably due to the fact that they started their A-League men's team, mm-hmm. And they needed to put a lot of effort and focus in on that. So for that year, it sort of went away. And then Amanda Stella became the president of the club, and we try to get up and running again. So myself, Amanda, and a few other people again approached Western and said, oh, let's get this going, you know, let's create a pathway for girls. And Western United was so open and honest and, how can I say it, just ambitious to create some sort of girls connection. And that's the thing that attracted myself and Amanda and Calder as a whole, is we sort of shared the same vision to create another pathway for girls in the state. And we literally just, it was just from then, we, you know, started putting programs together and ideas together, and it was constant meetings, constant conversations. And then it obviously led to, the W League license and the applications and all that type of stuff. And then, however long, a year and a half down the track, we're in this position where we've got the license secured for 2022-23. And a program, a junior program or an academy program that's running. We'll look to do a few more little bits and pieces with even younger age groups in the next 6 months as well. So that's sort of where it was born and where it started. But there was a lot of key people that were part of that initially. And yeah, we're here now, which is great.
Alex?
I was just going to ask. Yeah, no. So looking at that, you've obviously got a year to go before, a couple more months before 2022, but obviously you guys will start then. How How does one, you get an open, sort of like an open slate. You can pick whoever you want. How do you go about choosing the right players that will fit one, the club's approach and also your approach in coaching? How do you go about that?
Is that from the Western United perspective or Calder? Yeah, so from, I think the one vision that was very equal between the two clubs, between Calder and Western, was to have a one sort of pathway, one consistent message, one program that was all consistent right from the littlest, you know, mini roos all the way to the top up. So basically we put ourselves in a scenario where we wanted to create that and have as simple as that and be not like the other clubs around Australia is have this connection between an NPL community club or something like that with obviously a W League club. And then that pathway was created. So it was basically just to have one consistent message and have this program where you're creating, you've got like a football factory to some extent. Mm-hmm. You're almost creating, you know, players within an NPL setup that are hopefully going to be ready for W League. You might have a few in the first year, you might have more in the next year, but hopefully just having the opportunity to pick players from within a program is what I guess the one goal between the two clubs was. Because at the moment, I mean, I've been part of W League setups in the past, and at the moment it's a couple of W League clubs are just, you know, picking the best players within the state, within their programs. But there's, you know, you've got players coming from one club going into Victory or to City. And then we're trying to create one where the player has got one message from, you know, for 52 weeks, basically.
Yeah.
That's the aim, you know, not saying that every player from Calder, you know, seeing a squad will be playing for Western, but, you know, hopefully a majority or hopefully, you know, at least half or just below that would be the ideal scenario.
Touching on the pathway, sorry, Alex.
Yeah, you're right.
We had a few MPLW players play recently for Matildas against Brazil. How proud are you to see Angie Beard on the squad?
Angie came to us 3-4 years ago now, and she had one goal, and that was to get herself into Matildas. And it'd be worth having a conversation with Angie because she might share that same similar story. But we sat in the coffee shop, and there was a couple of parts to her game that she wanted to improve. And it was more in the advanced positions of the field. She pretty much had down pat the left back position. She knew how to do that well, but she wanted to secure how she attacked more. And we had a conversation. It was, I want to focus on this. And I said, done. Come down to this level. We'll work on that. And hopefully you get yourself in the Matildas or you get yourself even better. And between Calder and Victory and Jeff and myself, she pushed herself. And I pinch myself still because we know how hard she worked for that. And to see her out there, you know, the other day, and even to see her out there when she first got out there, was absolutely amazing. It's huge for our club because obviously she's come through it and she's well respected and everyone loves her, and all the young girls at our club, the mini roos and that, absolutely adore her. So to see her out there was just absolutely phenomenal. And even to see her lift the trophy for Melbourne Victory last year as the captain was just an amazing, amazing situation. So yeah, it was really good, really good for that.
When you see a player come to you and say those things to you, does it sort of, do your eyes light up and think, well, you know, this is my chance now to really create something special? Or does every coach wait for that type of player to come to them?
I mean, I've always said that the NPL needs to be the stepping stone into the W League. And I've always been fortunate enough to work in environments where we've been able to attract good players to our club because of the connections or something that I might have had previously. So even when I was at Bundoora, we always got good players that came from, you know, from Victory and City, and it was actually just Victory back then. But even now, the way I look at it is you create an environment where the players can prepare and it feels as close to what a W League setup will be, then they will come to you because they want to keep themselves prepared for that W League season. And for me, it's just a no-brainer. Just create an environment where the players feel like they would feel as if they're playing in the W League. So then their transition from the NPL to the W League is not far. It's quite short. If you can create that situation, then players will want to come to play for you, but more importantly, they'll want to play to improve, to then go to the next level. An interesting story was Polly Dorr, and Polly came to us as a 16-year-old and literally actually came from a recommendation from Teo Pelizzeri. And she was a fantastic young kid, ambitious, and she wanted to just take her game to the new level, to the next level. And you know, myself and the coaching staff at the time were like, let's push this girl, let's see where we can get her. And within 2 or 3 years, she was, you know, starting for Melbourne Victory every game, and, you know, is on the radar for Young Matildas and all that type of stuff. For us, that was amazing. That's as proud of a moment as it is for someone like Angie as well. But one other, you know, proud situation is also keeping players enjoying the game. And Alex Sinclair is a perfect example as to someone who just continues love playing her football. And I'm sure in any other environment, she would have still done the same thing. But if you keep, you know, you keep them excited and stimulated and passionate and have a goal, they'll continue working hard for you. And the NPL might be their W League, or they might have an opportunity to play W League one time. But if you keep that set up professional, even people like Alex Sinclair, who've played probably 4,000 games, you know, even people like Alex Sinclair still want to push to be, you know, part of the next level. And I love that. So no matter if it's a young 16-year-old or if it's, I won't say her age if it's Ellie Sinclair, they always want to push and be the best they can at this level, which is fantastic.
A young Ellie Sinclair.
She's 21. She's 21.
Yeah. I say that to her. I keep reminding her that she's got to play still for another 10 years. So
yeah.
So keeping on the call of the United front, we just had a look recently. You signed 7 young girls from the under-19s to move into the senior squad. That's just a phenomenal effort, because you get maybe 1 or 2, but to get 7 from the under-19s, something must be in the water there at Calder United for that to happen. How does one go about that, to get 7 players from the under-19s into the senior squad?
It's something that when this club first started in 2016, I was the first appointed person there, and the one thing that I said to the club was, you can do this a couple of ways. You can always every year, you know, try and bring in the best players you can and be successful and blah, blah, and all that type of stuff. And you'll always be competing with being successful, because other teams will always try and get those good players as well. I said, or you can produce your own and still bring in good players at some point. So the goal was always to have this retention right through our age groups, from 13s up to our seniors, right from year one. And to provide the best possible opportunities for any girl, especially in the western suburbs of Melbourne, but even broader. And it was basically our thought just to always try and produce. Let's try and produce as many girls as we can within our program. So while we had 7 girls promoted this year, from 2017 to 2018, we also had about 5 or 6 elevated as well. And that's something that we're extremely proud of as a club, and it goes to the same message that I was saying to you before about the connection with Western now. You know, you'd almost like another 5 or 6 to go from Calder to Western now next year, and then you've got this one consistent message and part program. Yes, it's going to be challenging, and it always is challenging, but that's the point. Like, that's the point. If this was easy and the girls came to an easy situation, then they're not going to improve. So if you're putting, you know, 17, 18, 19-year-olds into senior setups earlier, you hope that they're going to produce and then they're going to progress, because if you keep them in the age groups that they are, it's not challenging enough. So that's the challenges that we've got as coaches, but us as a club, we set ourselves, and we believe that formula works. And for us, it's not even about like the winning stuff. Like, the winning stuff is fantastic, and don't get me wrong, everyone loves to win everything, but if you can try and balance both, then happy days. Yeah, you try and do what you've got to do, but we're extremely proud of that situation. Like, I think out of that 7, 2 of the girls, 3 of the girls were part of our under 13 team in year 1. So you know, they've come right through the club as 11, 12 year olds, and now they're playing senior football. So I don't know if many clubs can say that they've done that, but the next goal is to have those girls in the next 2 years, you know, getting a debut in the W League, because then you can say there's a real consistent pathway and a program. So yeah, that's how we sort of go about it there.
And heading into next season, what's the one thing that you as a coach and your team, you want to focus on and make sure that you're sort of down packed and be ready for?
For no COVID. That's the first situation. I don't think anyone can be ever ready for that situation, but our thought on next year is to work with the senior players and give them as much opportunity as possible to develop and progress and aim for the next level. And we want to create an environment next year where players are going to be preparing for the W League. So you know, different setup, the coaching structure at our club has completely changed. We've, you know, sort of brought in some real experts in their fields and even the age groups. We've appointed a fantastic technical director. Who you might know, Alex? Do you know Kogu through the futsal world?
Sorry, what was his name?
Kogu?
I might know by face. There's a lot of people. Face, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well, like we've brought in some of these people that are obviously going to bring the club to another level, and that's the way we look at it. If we can create a place where girls are preparing and feeling as professional as they possibly can, even the youngest girl, you know, the 11, 12-year-old, or even the 8 or 9-year-old that's a mini-roo, if we can create an environment where it is as professional as possible, then hopefully that is a natural transition to one day when they become a W League player, Matilda, or go overseas to play. We are definitely looking forward to playing some consistent football, and hopefully again no lockdowns or no outbreaks or anything like that.
Yeah, and to have spectators back will be awesome as well, because you got quite a community you know, supporting the girls, you know, on game day. So I love that, the vibe that you have. So yeah, spectators, fans, families, I think that's what we want as well, not just playing, because you know, if you're just going to play in front of a field with no fans, there's no vibe. So yeah, I think that for me, I'm looking forward to having a bit more atmosphere and a bit more fans and spectators on game day
and hearing your vocals on the commentary. That's what we're looking forward to as well.
Thank you. I always try to put my name down in all the Calder games, if you haven't noticed. Put me down.
There is a game that we want to talk about, and that's the Heidelberg game. Han and I both did that one. That day was a very weird day. You guys dominated in every single possession possible, but in the end, Heidelberg come away for 1-0 win. How difficult was it for you on that day, or what was the sort of feeling afterwards when the game ended?
Thanks for bringing that game up and reminding me. we don't lose a lot, and when we do lose, we hate it. When we lose in those type of scenarios, it's you're literally scratching your head after the game and going, what did I do as a coach? Is there something that I should have said? Is there something I should have done? And you're always picking your brain about that, those scenarios. But believe it or not, after that, it was literally like we turned around, and I think it was maybe a week or two after that, we just went on a fantastic run. So it was almost like we needed a little bit of a kick up the butt. Because we knew how good we were and we knew how good we could be. And, you know, we were playing on a fantastic stage. You know, it was beautiful ground, beautiful facility. The only, no excuses ever, but the only interruptions that we had were we couldn't get change normally, you know, in change rooms. We had to get change outside because that was the first, I think it was the first game back after COVID.
Yeah, actually. Yeah.
You know, the girls had to get changed, not in a change room, they had to get changed outside, or one by one, I think it was. We couldn't do a proper team talk on a board. You know, you couldn't do everything that was normal. And that became, I think, a bit of a distraction for the players. For me also, it was, you know, not normal. I like everything, not sane, but consistent. And it just didn't feel right. And I kind of felt like when we were missing everything in that first half, it was one of those games where you just go, we ain't going to score. Like, we aren't going to score. We need to come out of here with a draw. Mm-hmm. And then when the second half started, it was like, oh God, what are we doing? What's happening here? What's happening here? And even like right to the end, even when they went up 1-0, I think Harry hit the crossbar with about 5 minutes left. Was an absolute cracking strike, and that hit the crossbar. I looked at everyone on the bench, and I was just like, it ain't happening today, mate. Like, this is, we need to pencil this in. And I was already thinking, I'll be honest with you, I was already thinking in that last 10 minutes about what do we need to do to fix this for next week. And as I said, we just went on this magnificent roll and run after that. We won, you know, our Nike FC Cup quarterfinals, finals and all that type of stuff, and got ourselves into a semi, and we won those things. We won, you know, we had some crucial games against Emerging. It was great. It was absolutely brilliant. I think that was the week after we might have drawn with Berlin, I think 3-3 as well.
Yeah.
And we were up 3-0 at halftime, you know. So we almost literally fixed everything that we did wrong. But, yeah, I hate those days, guys. Like, those days there, just I hate them. But that's football, yeah.
That is. Sorry, I'll ask one, Alex. Speaking on that day, that game, is there a ritual that you do have on game day that, you know, players normally, you know, set out kits, or they've eat something, or they do something? As a coach, what would be your routine on game day?
I probably can't give you the secret, son, because then someone will try and counter that on me and try and try and get me on offside. So if I haven't already let it out of the bag that make Calder feel absolutely uncomfortable for a game, then I don't know what it is. So, yeah, no, basically very relaxed. I like to feel relaxed. I like the players to feel relaxed. We like to create an environment where the players feel extremely comfortable, and they come into the change room, and you know, it's almost like not a party atmosphere, but it's almost like we're getting in there, and yes, we know we've got a game in an hour's time, but let's be as calm and relaxed as possible. Once we get out on the field and we warm up, that's when we start adjusting. And then literally when we come in for that last team talk, that's when everyone's brain is just ready to go. But ritual as such, no. I like to get out and watch the under-19s play. I'll always aim to do that and see what's happening with our players coming through. And that's why I've got so much confidence in this group of seven players that we're elevated, because I've managed to, you know, see them as much as possible. But, you know, every player has their own little things that they like to do, and the twins will kill me for saying this, but they are literally the last two girls out of the change rooms when the whistle goes, because they have to go to the toilet right before we have to walk out for the kickoff. Like, they'll kill me for saying that, but we're always waiting in the tunnel for two people, and it's the twins all the time. So yeah, but there's no real rituals as such, but I'm sure the girls have got their own little things that they sort of, you know, do.
Yeah, I think I mentioned something. It was like, why aren't they out yet? And it was actually recorded on the streaming. I'm like, oh, that wasn't great. But yeah, I was like, now I know why. It's a twins exactly. In the bathroom.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If you were to start your coaching career again, what would you do differently, do you think?
I don't know, Alex. It's a good question, actually, because I started coaching at the absolutely the youngest age group of girls. Not the youngest, but a community level. It was under 16s, Whittlesea Zebras, I think it was. I worked through that process as a coach. I worked at that age group, and then the natural progression was to work at State 2 Bundoora United, and we got them promoted 3 years in a row into the NPL or the WPL. So I sort of was learning my coaching along the way as well as educating myself. I was lucky enough to work in some fantastic setups because I was a goalkeeper coach. So I worked with Melbourne Victory. I had the opportunity to work with some fantastic coaches and players that helped me, you know, sort of look at things and go, all right, that's not what I'll do as a coach, or that's what I will do as a coach. So I was able to work with some great people to use them for their knowledge, for the good and the bad. That general progression, I think, helped me, but also the input with, you know, working at NTC as the goalkeeper coach for many years in that professional setup, working with Victory, having the opportunity to go to Young Matilda's camps with the goalkeeper, with Bree Davey, who was the goalkeeper at the time. Having all those little opportunities helped me. I honestly wouldn't change anything I've done as a coach, Alex, and I don't know if there's anything that I would bring in to make different, because I actually feel like the progression for me as a coach has just happened the right way in regards to starting as an under 16 girls coach, you know, at Whittlesea Zebras, to coaching now and hopefully leading, you know, a fantastic W League setup or A League women setup. That's the ultimate goal. And in the end, coaching is a passion, and you know, you want to be as professional as you can about it. But I love it, like absolutely love it. That's why that question you asked me about how did I feel after the Heidelberg game, mate. I'll tell you how I really felt. Like this computer would probably have a little smash through it.
In addition to that, Mark, sorry, Alex, keep interrupting you. Do apologize.
No, you're right. No.
What has been your successful moment as a coach?
The most successful moment would be that obviously that 2019 season was absolutely brilliant. Successful, I wouldn't say successful. I would say probably significant. Alex Sinclair, our captain that year, along with Emma Robes, or she was one of our leaders, Alex was. She had a massive week that week. She lost her father a couple of nights before the grand final. And significant is the word for me, because I think the way the players got around her and the way she seriously got up for that scenario was absolutely amazing. And if I say significant, I mean it more about the way the club conducted itself on that grand final day, because it's not easy. That wasn't an easy moment. It was tough for Alex. She's a leader of our club, and it was extremely tough. And the way every player worked that grand final for her, it wasn't about the 2019 season. It was actually about that game, and it was the way they did that. And you know, for someone to have that much courage to do that in that moment in Alex, that was easily one of the best moments of my coaching life. The way someone was so resilient and strong and focused and blocked everything that was going on. That was absolutely amazing. That's definitely one of the most significant moments. And probably coaching Whittlesea Zebras under 16 girls, honestly, in the very first year that I coached, and winning like an under 16 A championship. I don't even know what it was, with a group of girls that just loved to play soccer. And they could see that I was just a coach that just was starting my pathway, and I just loved coaching. They're probably two key significant moments. And obviously there's so many little things along the way, you know, players playing for national teams, players moving overseas, you know, so many significant moments, but those two are probably the key ones. And I'm sure hopefully there'll be a few more, and hopefully this one with, you know, a number of good young players coming through over the last couple of years at our club, that's hopefully going to be another one. And obviously maybe a W League round one in the next 10 months, and giving some people a debut would be amazing as well.
Fingers crossed. One last question before we wrap up. What would your players say your most annoying habit is?
Oh, Alex. I like this is, I don't know, take this the way you want. When we lose, win, draw, however it is, I get off that ground and I jump in my car and my brain is going 100 miles an hour, regardless if we won 5-0, 1-2-1, lost, whatever. My brain is just going. And I think the most annoying thing is that I like to get it out, and I like to talk to my players about the scenario, or I like to just like let it out. So probably ringing, they would say probably ringing them over the next 24 hours after we've played a game and hassling them about the way the game was would be one of their most annoying habits that I have, that they would think, because I look at it as if I'm trying to sort of get what I need to off my chest and talk to them about the game. But they probably just want to get over that game, like they've lost or they've won or whatever, and they're just over it. But I would say that's an annoying habit that I would definitely have. But it'd be interesting if you asked a couple of the girls, because I would love to hear what they thought about it as well.
We might have to come down one day and just do a round table with the team.
Get a survey going or something.
Yeah. Well, Mark, we want to thank you so much for joining us tonight. We appreciate it. We know your time is valuable. We can't thank you enough for your support and also call the support as well. You know, we can't thank your team as well. We love watching them play. They're a fantastic bunch of girls, and it's obviously the club's going in the right direction. And we want to thank you and the club so much for your time as well.
No, I really appreciate you guys jumping on. I'm anytime glad when I hear people doing stuff for the women's game. And Han and Alex, you're doing this, and it's a fantastic thing for the girls. Often gets unnoticed, and the girls' game often gets unnoticed. And unfortunately, hopefully it's going to get better. And with little things that you guys are doing right now, these are so crucial in our game, in the girls' game especially. So I really appreciate what you guys are doing as well.
Thank you so much. And Hart, thank you as well. And thank you to everyone for watching. We'll see you all next week. Make sure you subscribe to all our channels, and we'll come back next week with a different interview. Thanks for watching.